Today we will be reading from the book that the person that the choir just sang about, the person who said, "Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord?" Thank you for that song. Thank you, children, for your beautiful music. Thank you, Addie, for your song. We had a lot of music today, huh? You already feel full of the Spirit. I have a question for you, wives in the congregation. Do your husbands make you upset sometimes? Or is it just me? Listen to a couple's conversation. The husband says, What did I do? Are you serious? You really don't know, she says. I'm sorry. What are you sorry for? I'm sorry you're upset. How did you upset me? I don't know. I'm sorry. She walks away saying, "You've got to be kidding me. No one can be this dense." Not being a woman, I don't completely understand why men are so often so upsetting to their women. Actually, I may not know much at all. But if I may try, it seems like men could be more sensitive and more attentive to the nuances in the relationship, sort of. You know, learning to read between the lines, because it's not just always the words. Women often make the mistake of thinking that their men are more intuitive than they actually are. They're not. We're not. We don't pick up on the body language as easily or the cues. So ladies, please, do us a favor and just spell it out for us over and over again. Don't assume that we know, because I don't think we do. Don't assume that it was so clear, because as hard as it is to believe, it wasn't so clear. Now, you may be thinking, I do spell it out for my husband over and over again. Well, actually, he's not listening anymore, because it's just sounding like blah, 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 blah now. So there, you got to find a way to actually get him to listen, all right? And when he starts listening, spell it out in detail what you exactly want, because he doesn't know. We don't know. The Bible, in my opinion, is God's way of spelling things out for those who did not get it. The Ten Commandments, even. Do you know when the Ten Commandments were given in the history of the world? Was it right at the beginning of the fall? When was it? How many years passed before God decided to give the written word, command of God? Over 3,000 years. Why did he wait so long? Well, no, he had given it to them before, prior to that. He was hoping that people will listen to the Spirit of God through their hearts. But when he got frustrated, he said, "Do I have to spell it out for you?" The Ten Commandments were given out of frustration. The trouble is, even after spelling things out clearly, God's people either don't get it or they refuse to get it. And the passage for today reveals God's utter frustration as the people did not understand what was important to him. Isaiah 58. Now, this passage is not the pastor's favorite. And I imagine there will be many here who have never heard a sermon on this passage before. Isaiah 58. Take the Bible in front of you and go to Isaiah 58. We'll be reading almost the entire chapter together. Isaiah 58. God says, "Shout it aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the descendants of Jacob their sins." What are their sins? "For day after day, they seek me out." Well, that certainly isn't sin. "They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask for me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them." It doesn't sound bad at all so far, does it? "Why have we fasted," they say, "and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed?" This is what's going on so far. Huh? God's upset. He sounds upset. And the people are saying, "What? What have we done? Do we not seek you day after day? Aren't we eager to know your ways? Are we not a nation that does what is right, not forsaking your commands? We ask you to make the right decisions for us, and we are eager for you to be near us. We even fast, giving up physical necessities to humble ourselves before you, but all you do, God, is complain and nag that we are still doing something wrong." What? What have we done? Sounds like the husband. Let me ask you this. Were the Israelites sincere? Were they? Did they really want God? Did they really want to follow God? Yes, I believe so. They did. Maybe not all of them, but many of them did. I don't doubt that the Israelites were doing their best to appease their God. And because of their many efforts, they felt like God should have been appeased. So why is God still upset? What? What now? They make God sound irrational and unreasonable. So what's really going on here? If people are making their best effort to be good and to avoid evil, and still upsetting God, what's the solution? I mean, these were the eager beavers in the church. They were the ones that never missed the prayer meetings. They were the ones that were enthusiastic, sincere, and ready to work, fasting whenever they could. I mean, what is your favorite food? Can you forego that for the rest of your life? Can you not eat for a week? I mean, it's a difficult thing. And yet they would do it for God. They were serious about their God and their religion, and God was still upset. What is missing, you think? I'm going to give you 30 seconds to talk about it with the person next to you. All right? 30 seconds if you want. What was missing in their relationship to God? Go ahead. Okay. Let's hear from you. What do you think? What was missing with the people of God that God would still be upset with them, even though they were seeking him with all their heart, it seemed like, and they were doing all these things, fasting and asking God to lead them and guide them. They were worshiping and giving offerings and making sacrifices, and God was not happy with any of those things. What was going on? Anybody? Wow. Really? Amanda?
They were missing a sense of humility because they were doing it more of, oh, look at us, look at how religious we are, instead of doing it because they wanted to please God.
So they were not humble, and they were doing it to look good. They were kind of showing off their religious fervor. Okay, very good. Anyone else? Wrong motive. Wrong motive. Alex? Is that a testimony? Yeah? Okay. Very good. Leanne?
I think they were going through the motions and following the rules rather than putting their heart into it and understanding the whole reason behind it.
Is there a way to do the right things and not realize that you're not doing it right? Is there a way to convince yourself that you are doing what is good and holy, and you are only going through the motions? Is that possible? I don't know if that was the case with the people here. They may have actually been very sincere. They might have had good motives. There might be something else that's missing, and that's what I'm going to talk to you about today. This passage has helped me to understand something a little bit. I confess, and this is my testimony, that there were times when I felt like I was doing everything I could possibly do, and still I wasn't doing it right. Now, I'm not talking about my relationship to God anymore. And in my mind, I was thinking, hey, this is irrational. This is unreasonable. I am really doing my best. How is it that I cannot please this person completely, even though I am doing my best? And here is my realization after studying this passage. Tell me if I am onto something here. The thing is that even when I am trying so hard to be a good husband, doing everything I think a good husband should do, and doing everything that is asked of me, I am still doing all these things from my perspective, my point of view, my mindset, my world. Does that make sense? It is how I think things should be. I am so stuck in my own, how can I say this, worldview, that even though I am honestly, earnestly, and sincerely trying to do what is good, I cannot please the other person in the relationship as long as I am not willing to look from the other point of view. Does that make sense? I saw a comedy where two politicians are trying to convince each other of their viewpoints. And they're like night and day. They're so different. And they're making good points, and the listeners are thinking, wow, those are really good points, but there is no way that the other party will be convinced. It's so clear. They are shut down. I mean, you cannot talk to me about that because I will never agree to that, and vice versa. Actually, maybe it wasn't a comedy. It might have been an actual political debate. I think in relationships, we can get to a point where we are so very much in our own world that we're not even aware that we're not listening anymore. That the words that are coming out of the other person's mouth is not the actual meaning of what that person is saying. It is what I am interpreting it as in my world. Have you ever done this? You say something, hey, honey, can you pick up some milk? I'm just trying to think of anything. And the person brings cheese, and you're like, milk? Hey, this is same type of thing here, dairy product. It's like, what? Why can't it? This was a simple thing. Why can't you? That's a small example of how a person is just, I've had this happen where someone actually interpreted what I was saying and said, no, I brought this because this is better for you. This is not what you really need, although you may want that. I think the people of Israel had difficulties trying, realizing that they're trapped in their own mind, their own way of life. And so when God says, this is what I would like you to exemplify in your life, they were clueless. They only ended up going through the motions. And it was a long list of things. And so here God is spelling out for them. Let me read it for you quickly. Isaiah 53:8. Let me read verse 3 again. Yet on the day of your fasting, have I read 3 yet? On the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Now, as Seventh-day Adventists, we do a lot of things like this. We keep the Sabbath begrudgingly. We have sacrificed tasty foods to honor the Lord. There are just so many lists of things that we have done to appease our God, sacrificing ourselves, and then we get offended when God, through the Holy Spirit, nags at our conscience as if we're not doing it right. So you know what we do? You know what we do when that happens? We just add more things to sacrifice. We just add to the list. I'm not having peace because I am not diligent enough. I am not keeping the Sabbath well enough. Well, have we considered that perhaps it's not anything like that at all? Perhaps it's time for us to come out of our bubble, of our cocoon, of our way of looking at life. Stop being so self-centered in the way you sacrifice. Does that make sense? there is something already given to you. The Bible talks about it as the image of God. I believe that each of you has the potential to please God in a big way. And it is not by making more effort. It is not by making more sacrifices and fasting one more day. That's not it. That's not how it works. You know, there was a man who was trying really hard to be a good husband. And so he says to himself, I will write reminders. And he writes down, I must love my wife. I must say, I love you. He writes down, do not forget to think about her today. Do not forget her name. What would you say about his efforts? Huh? What is he missing? Everything? You know, if you ever say to yourself, oh man, I learned something wonderful about God and I wrote it down, but I forgot. Forget it. That was not important enough for you to remember. If you ever forget something like that, there's no use retrieving it. Because the important things are in life are not learned by writing it down. It is experienced. You cannot fall in love with somebody and say, oh, I better write this down. I fell in love with such and such on March 16, 2013. I better write this down unless I forget. You don't forget it. You don't forget epiphanies like this, an experience that has transformed you. That's not how it works. And the relationship with God, if it amounts to making more effort and more sacrifices and fasting before the Lord and keeping these many rules and then feeling guilty that you're not doing more, and then you add, if that's what it is, you are missing everything. That's not how it is. This is supposed to be a life of freedom, a life where you have been given everything. God has done it all. Remember last week? God is the one that entirely by himself reconciles each person to himself. And what do we do? What do we do? We are in the picture of this reconciliation business, yes. But what we do is something very natural. It is something that, and so this is it. How do we know? What is the litmus test? How do we know? How do I know if God is pleased with me? Well, we know that it is not by looking at how much we tithe or whether it's the right percentage. Although, yeah, Jesus says, go ahead and do that. But there are bigger things, greater matters of the law. It's not by making sure, it's not so physical, is it? It's not so much about all the things that I've been doing, trying as a husband. It's a matter of the heart. What is that? Now, here is the interesting thing, and this is the litmus test. This is how you can know, and this passage talks about it. Is it not, Isaiah 58:7, is it not to share your food with the hungry and provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not turn away from your own flesh and blood. This seems like something very physical. What do I mean by that? Something that is done with our hands. It's behavior. But here's the catch. The thing that God is really looking for is the life that we live naturally. If you see yourself doing these things, living in such a way without making effort to do it because you have been influenced by somebody, you have actually decided to see it from that perspective. You have come out of this shell of yours, this worldview, and you have entered into another realm, which is called the kingdom of God, as Jesus puts it. And then you have understood the mind of God. And so that has become who you are, and you now naturally live according to that life. And that's how, this is what it looks like. You share your life. That is the natural byproduct, and that is the litmus test. And what, let me leave this with you, words of hope towards the end of this chapter. Verse 8, then your light will break forth like the dawn, when you have finally seen God's perspective, that is, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, here am I. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. Amen.